birds align, the border finds, and the humming wise. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, across the mills, across the stacks. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand.
Hey everybody, welcome to Scaredy Cats, our horror show. We've been killing it, pun unintended, lately, and tonight we have a movie that, you know, has paved the way for the slasher genre. It's not the first slasher ever, but it's one of the most influential. We're going to be doing the John Carpenter classic from 1978, Halloween. I'm one of your co-hosts tonight, Daniel Hummer. I'm here with my always wonderful sister, Mindy. How you doing?
Hi guys, how we doing? Sorry, that's my new intro and my new outro with Hootie Hoo. So yeah, Hootie Hoo guys. It will. There's gonna be a hashtag Hootie Hoo.
So we're excited to tackle that, but before we get into it, a couple plugs to get out of the way. Make sure to check out the Dirt Sheet Dudes, Boxman and Smart, couple of great guys every Wednesday after AEW and every Friday after SmackDown. Boxman just came on for Settle the Ring. He was a special guest host yesterday, and it was fun to have him. So make sure to check him out.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, give them love because, you know, they're great guys, and they're in the same space, and we've been working together a lot. And there's more collaborations to come between the two of us soon, I'm sure of it. Also, Unscripted Wrestling at 6:30, right before SmackDown. Check it out if you're a wrestling fan. 6:30 to 8, we usually go, and then you can hit wrestling right after. And Saturdays is usually a free-for-all. I think we're doing a UFC fight retrospective next week, which I'm excited. It's one of our first. Me and Eric are going to be pioneering that. And Settle in the Ring happens on Saturdays. And then obviously Sundays at 3 is this show, one of our more popular, The Scaredy Cats. Make sure to keep checking us out. Check out the Instagram for everything Unscripted. Make sure to check out The Scaredy Cats Facebook page. And keep following and supporting us so we can keep bringing you this good content.
And share.
Yes.
Share our essence.
Yeah, share the beautiful essence. Now, let's get into it. This movie has done a lot for the horror genre, Mindy. One of our favorite subgenres, slashers, of course. What do you think this movie means to horror?
One of the most vast and controversial slashers that have ever actually come out of media, really.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but I watch older horror movies. That's why I know, like, House of Wax is a remake, even though it was, like, 1930s and stuff like that. And the actual first original slasher was in 1950-something. Don't hold me to it. It's 1950-something. It's called Peeping Tom. And it's a slasher movie where you're actually in the killer's POV. You're seeing everything from the killer's eyes. That's where John Carpenter got some of his horror tropes and some of his ideas.
The intro scene
for the movie.
Yeah.
Yes. The intro scene, the scene where you could just see in his POV, those kind of things. They very much so influenced it. But as far as them both as movies, I will say that Halloween was definitely more famous.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
definitely. Like, it had a much bigger fan base. It made a lot of money.
Absolutely. I mean, let's talk about numbers.
It was actually, if I believe so, Daniel, it was actually one of the highest grossing indie movies.
Oh, it is. They made this movie on a $300,000 budget, and it grossed over $60 million towards the $70 million mark. This is a movie that was a big success and kind of, and you can't even call it a cult hit because that's mainstream success, $70 million in the box office.
Yeah.
Movies are lucky to get that, especially for a low budget horror movie. Why do you think that the American people and people worldwide really caught on to this Michael Myers character? Why is it still relevant? And why was this the movie that really ignited people's love in the slashers?
Well, it was around the era where Psycho, and then you got The Birds by Alfred Hitchcock, and then you got Black Christmas, and just a bunch of other horror movies as well that really did inspire this movie. But I will have to say what this movie had was a very good story.
Great plot.
Great plot, great story, great acting. Jamie Lee Curtis was the best choice they could have picked for Laurie Strode.
I mean, yeah, her role and Donald Pleasant's role as Dr. Loomis, I mean, carry this film, I think.
Absolutely. Donald Pleasant is one of my favorite horror actors, honestly. I love him, and I love Jamie Lee Curtis. A lot of people don't know this, but actually in Psycho, her mother was actually in it. She was in the infamous shower scene.
Okay.
Yeah, she was the one that, the first lady that got killed by him.
Right.
Yeah, that was her mom. So she was kind of just thrusted into that. That's why she did Halloween, prom night, Fog.
Oh, yeah. And my question to you is, where does Jamie Lee rank up in Scream Queen history? Is she the definitive Scream Queen?
She was one of the ones that started it, definitely. She's one of the main people that did start it, I will have to say.
Yeah.
Definitely, hands down. Her, and then you have Heather Langenkamp,
yes,
played Nancy. You have the girl that played...
Annie.
The girl that played Annie from Friday the 13th.
Gina.
Gina?
Yeah,
okay. Gina. But anyways, guys, you can pretty much tell what I'm trying to say here. She did start the Scream Queen era.
Yeah.
Her and those several other actresses. It was very small at first. It was kind of, I would say it's more like the size of like a little breakfast club.
Yeah.
But it grew.
Well, I mean, to me, like, you think Sydney, obviously. You think Nancy.
Yeah.
Friday the 13th girl to an extent, but she only had one movie, so it's a little hard. But this, I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis, I think, is a lot of people's, like, when they think of Scream Queen, they're like, Jamie Lee Curtis. And if not for this one, I mean, Prom Night's a great one, Fog's a great one, but this movie, I mean, has set the stage for slashers.
Yeah. And they got so much out of it, too, especially for being an indie movie. They had several sequels. They've been able to change the storyline 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
And keep it going. That's talent, people.
You have a franchise with over 10 movies here and a couple timelines. Is this the best Halloween movie that there is because it's the OG?
I would say it's my personal favorite, but I've said on the show before, I don't really like to give an opinion like that because everybody is going to have an opinion on what the best one is. But my favorite is definitely this one, hands down.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about that opening scene and how – because we've talked about the Halloween remake and that opening scene. I obviously prefer this one. You don't delve too much into Michael's origin, but first of all, whoever Judith – who was the guy – do we have a character name for the guy that was clapping with Judith before he left?
I cannot remember.
Whoever he is, he's a one-pump chump, and he should be ashamed of himself. Because they went upstairs for like 30 seconds, and he came right back down.
And he didn't even get a sandwich.
Yeah, he didn't even get a damn sandwich. So he leaves, and then obviously Michael kills Judith half naked. What do you think that scene means for setting the stage for this movie?
It was very creepy to not only know that it was a little kid, but to see it from the point of view of a child that was about to kill his sister. And he was completely okay with it. He was just like, I'm going to kill my sister. I don't like her.
Yeah.
So that's just, and he never really had that until now, until then.
And he seems relatively innocent, too, when the parents walk up on him.
He's a cute little boy, blonde hair, blue eyes. You wouldn't think anything of him.
So he does not look as menacing as the kid from the remake. Whatsoever.
No, the one in the remake that zombie picks,
you can tell that kid's going to go fucking nuts at some point. You can just tell.
That little boy asked when he was in a police car, I said it before and I'll say it again, can I play my DS while you guys are arresting me?
Yeah.
And Ron Zombie himself said, I made a monster. He probably did.
He probably did.
It's probably the Zodiac killed.
Well, I don't think...
We don't know if that's the Zodiac Killer. We're just kidding. Anyways, back to the movie. I don't know. I mean, how do you feel about the way that it kind of basically plowed through all of the other horror genres for a while?
What do you mean, the Halloween movies?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, without this, because I love the mythos when it comes to these movies. I like the history. I like that they start. I know with the new Halloweens that it's just to go right after the first one, right?
Yes, but they also change the storyline as well. They change it to Michael just being a crazy lunatic who just went after Lori and her friend.
Well, yeah, that's just the first one because he's not, like, related to her until the second one, right?
Yes, technically.
Okay. So,
I mean, he is related to her in this one, but they don't say it.
So I'm a big mythos guy. My favorite Friday the 13th is 4. It's not the first one. A lot of the horror movies, I like some of the later entries, honestly. This one, obviously, this is the definitive Halloween. This is the classic you should go to if you want to get in touch with Michael Myers and see his story. But the franchise and how they plowed through the horror genre, I still enjoy it. I mean, the only one that I really can't stand is the third one, and I'm sure we'll touch on it. You want to watch it and talk about it.
My fiance, guys, he wants to come on here and talk to you about it.
Yeah.
I told him it's a waste of his time. You guys aren't going to want to hear it, but he wants to. We're going to let him do it.
I don't know. We get views when we talk about shitty stuff, so we might. But, I mean, this... And I'm going to get into talking about this movie as a whole now, because one of the things I can say about this movie that's missing from a lot of horror movies, and it's my favorite thing about horror movies, is atmosphere.
Absolutely.
Atmosphere, the vibe, it just seems so tense and creepy all the time. The long shots of the houses, and I feel like Carpenter really gets you, like, recognized with Haddonfield. Like, you feel like you live there. Like, you know each house, like, front to back. You've seen all the angles of shots. So then when they're running through it, you know, like, what areas they're going to take. And I just like how they put that mindset in to where now you know, like, the exact geography of the town. And you're going to see, like, where they run to and how they...
Yeah. And the musical score, too, actually. As it is a little annoying, it can be.
A little bit, yeah.
The score itself, I'm not just talking about the regular Halloween sounds, the actual score of the movie, fantastic. It knew when to go up, it knew when to go down.
Yeah.
It knew when to escalate and when to be silent and to just be very, very quiet but still heard. And I love movies like that with good scores.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
They don't rely on bands. They don't rely on soundtracks. They just rely on good old-fashioned instruments.
And all you need is a... It might get annoying, but it's fucking scary.
It really is.
I went back and watched this, I think, Friday night, and it was still scary.
Oh, yeah. This movie will always, always be scary.
Yeah. There was still times that I jumped. There was still times where I was glued to the TV. I was like, what the hell is going to happen? All the false things of him dying. Everything in this movie I just thought was done really well. I mean, of course, there's a couple of the...
He's so soulless.
Yeah, he really is. And he's just the perfect, like, you don't know his motivations. He doesn't care. He's just this, like... And Michael Myers' character was based off, like, numerous serial killers, correct?
Absolutely, yep.
Get into that a little bit, because...
I don't know too much history about that. Like, a lot of people are like, wow, she doesn't know too much history. But I do know that there was a serial killer in Niagara Falls in the 60s that inspired this. Also, Ed Gein was also some inspiration, which a lot of horror movies from that era, Texas Chainsaw, this one, they were basically about Ed Gein in some form of way. Also, there was... The Florida Ripper.
Yeah.
That was also took into consideration, as well as some short stories that Mr. Carpenter had read.
Yeah.
And he decided that he liked them. So not necessarily based off a true story, but based off like a cluster of things that happened. is what I would say.
I agree, and I think, would you say John Carpenter is a genius for crafting this?
Absolutely. Craft it and get it done on such a low budget and then have such a phenomenon happen. Some can say luck and everything, and yeah, he was lucky. But he was also very talented. He is very talented. I believe he's still alive. He is very talented. Very talented man.
Oh, yeah. And his original vision, which this was supposed to be a solo thing.
This was supposed to be an anthology.
Anthology. Yeah. But this was supposed to be the only Michael Myers movie that we got.
The second one was meant to happen.
Yeah, but that only came when Michael Myers got such high praise, though. And they're like, you got to continue the story and give them an ending.
Well, they were supposed to do that. And then the third one, they were going to start from scratch and do a whole nother villain, a whole nother story. They did that.
It didn't work
because people fell in love with Michael Myers.
Yeah.
And because Michael Myers is right up there with Jason Voorhees, Freddy, Leatherface.
He might be ahead of them, to be honest.
They're all up there. They're all horror icons. Candyman.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not referenced that much, but y'all know how much I love Candyman.
Yeah.
I really do. I love Tony Todd so much. He's such an incredible actor. He's so good.
Yeah.
But getting back to this, I will have to say the casting was definitely on point, and score was on point, and he knew his cinematography. He knew what he wanted and what looked good and what didn't look good, and it played in his favor.
Yeah, I think because he got the atmosphere down to a key and the aesthetic and everything that it had to be.
Absolutely.
And it's just a creepy adventure the whole, hour and some odd minutes. And it was just everything about it, like the fact that this was shot in 1978, you can watch it now and still get spooked. Like, that has to say something about the movie.
Like, one of my favorite scenes, Rob Zombie actually tried to recreate it when they're in the deputy's car and the sheriff's car, and it turned Donald Pleasant. And she's like, was that the boogeyman? And he goes, I think he may be. And Michael rips her out of the car through the window.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's a great scene. Like, and that's so perfectly timed that it's perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, in the Rob Zombie one, it was kind of like, well, I already saw this happen.
Yeah.
But in this one, it was so original because you didn't even see him.
No.
And the camera was pointed at her to the most point.
Right.
And then it left her for a second, came back, and then all of a sudden he was there. I will say Michael Myers is the absolute champion of just showing up. Of just, poof, I'm here. How you doing? I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing you can probably nitpick about this movie is how he's so good at time travel and teleportation, even though he walks at like 1 mile per hour.
Yeah, he walks slower than a snail, guys.
But he still ends up in places. You're like, how the fuck did he get there?
Ends up in front of people.
Yeah.
And they're like, how did you get in front of them?
And also, like, the body placement is something I don't understand. Like, 1 minute, Bob's hanging by a knife, which we'll get to him. And then the next minute, he's hanging by his feet, and then she opens the door, and he swings over. And it's like, why are you so interested in putting them in place?
I think it was because, though, he had that childlike way to him. I'm not going to say innocence, but he did very much so spend his childhood in Haddonfield.
Yeah.
So you got to think he's a sadistic child. He's a sadistic person.
Yeah.
And he's lived without his mother for all these years and everything and without his family. So he is, to me, he kind of is a little bit juvenile, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I can see that.
You can kind of tell that he didn't have a childhood. He's having fun with what he's doing.
Because he went from being a little kid to locked in a cage for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
So that's all he really has is that childlike mind. And
it's not
like he knows how to do taxes and shit.
Exactly. But it shines through, like what you said with the hanging part. And, like, yeah, it doesn't make any sense why he would go back and do things with them. But in a way, it does if you put in perspective what I just said, which is he never really grew up, at least not mentally.
Yeah. No, I can definitely see that. I think that's a good point. Now, an interesting part of this movie and something I was excited to talk about is the kills. Now, this is not Michael Myers' highest kill count. Honestly, there's actually just a few, what, like 5 to 7, I think? I don't have it.
Yeah, I'm
not sure.
Seven,
okay. But that's not like a lot for a horror movie, but they're done in such good ways. And a lot of these kills, everyone knows these kills because they're like, they're so ingrained in horror pop culture. What would be your top kill from this movie?
I kind of really, really enjoyed Annie's death.
She the girl in the bed or the car?
The car.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so sadistic because all you hear is him breathing until she honks the horn, and it feels very real.
And
the
she
way
thinks
she's...
that he's her boyfriend. And yeah. It's like, no, he's not your boyfriend. Get away from him. And it's just, it's so high tense and suspenseful, and you know he's going to do it, but you don't know how he's going to do it, and you don't know when.
Yeah.
And that's what is gripping about it. Because it really is. It's a gripping scene. Because you really don't know what's going to happen. What is he going to do to her? And when is he going to do it?
And it's one of those things to where, even though I've seen the movie and I know what happens, I had a feeling that she could get out of that situation. Like, oh, she could, like, get out and then get out of the car and then just keep running. But, and then you slowly see the hope in her eyes and the hope in your eyes, and you're like, oh, shit, it's over. He's fucking her up. She's dead.
Yeah.
And then he slits her throat at the end, and it's like, oh, my God. And I think that scene was done very well. And it
absolutely.
Was very creepy.
It was a very atmospheric kill.
Yeah, you still had put a jump scare in there, too.
Exactly. And I'm not a huge fan of jump scares, but I will have to say this movie did some really good jump scares.
Yeah, they did them in the right way.
Yeah, absolutely. So what was your favorite kill?
I said Bob earlier, and I'm going to stick with old Bobo. The way... I mean, Bob is a character I just find funny anyway.
Wasn't he the one that was screwing the one girl?
Yeah, and that was another sex scene that lasted 20 seconds, and she lied to his face when she said it was fantastic. There's no way that was fantastic. It lasted a few seconds.
Oh, yeah, but that was our first obligatory tit shot.
Saw Judith naked. We saw Judith's boobies when he killed
Judith?
Her. Yeah. Judith was in her underwear.
Never mind, guys.
And but, yeah, this was a tit shot, and... Well, this was after Bob was died where we saw her tit shot, I think. Well, we might have saw her tit when he climbed out of bed. Who knows? There are boobs. If you're looking for boobs, this scene is a good one. But Bob's hilarious because he goes out and then Michael Myers looks at him and he just kind of looks. And Bob does not seem frightened by seeing this man in a William Shatner scary mask. Like, he does not seem frightened.
Nope.
And the way he just grabs his neck, puts him on the wall, like... And that was when I was watching that. It's like, this isn't just a stab. I mean, obviously you get stabbed in the gut, but...
It's much more passionate when you choke somebody.
And before that, we've just seen him... I mean, the trucker we saw dead on the side of the road, but we've just seen him kill, like, teenage girls. Bob's a grown man, and you just see the way Michael, like, dominates him and has his throat and his hand on the wall. And it just looks so fucking real. And it's like, dude, this guy can't be stopped. And then he just puts the knife. And I don't care if it's physically correct or not, but the way that knife kept Bob's body and he was just sitting there kind of like a statue, like pinned to the wall. And then Michael lets go and he looks and he nods his head a little bit. He's like, wow, that's a fucking good, I made art. So he just like.
And
like,
that goes back to the juvenile thing too, because he probably did think he did art. He was like, wow, this is art.
Cool. And I just, everything about that kill, and then obviously when he kills the girlfriend after, and he puts the ghost sheet over his head. That's my favorite visual from the movie, is the ghost sheet over his head with Bob's glasses.
The ghost sheet!
Yeah.
We with the glasses, with the 70s glasses.
And she's showing him her tits, and she's like, you like what you see? And he just doesn't move a muscle. And then she picks up the phone, and he strangles her. So I think those two, I guess that's cheating, but that scene as a whole, I just love it.
Yeah. I get it. I like the Annie one more, because like I said, it's more of an atmosphere kind of thing. And it's more of, kind of in Scream 2.
Yeah.
When you knew that he was, the killer was sitting right next to her watching the movie. Like, you know that he killed her boyfriend and that he is in that car, not her boyfriend.
Exactly.
And she doesn't know. That's true terror, people.
Oh, yeah. It's scary.
To think you're in the car with somebody and then find out that you're in the car with somebody else. That's petrifying.
And especially because the car is such a small, closed space, too. It's not like you're in a big house.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're right there with the guy that's trying to slash your throat.
Exactly. It means, like, that guy was laying in waiting.
Yeah. I mean, that goes back to the urban legend, right? The guy in the back seat.
Yep. The man in the back seat and the guy that honks at the car to get him to pull over. And tells them at the last second when they're freaking out about the person honking at them that they have someone in the back seat, but it's too late and they get into a crash.
You can say what you want about what started the slasher genre and, you know, Black Christmas, Psycho, all these things. Do you think as far as the teenagers and the... I mean, they didn't drink. Yeah, they had some beer. So the consumption of alcohol and the sex and the do you think that really paved the way for teen slashers?
Absolutely, helped us be able to make the rules.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because Bob makes a fatal mistake. I mean, Randy Meeks would be at his TV punching it like left and right when Bob's like, "I'll be right back."
That's why when they're talking about the kid shot and Scream, he goes, "No, no, 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 no." Jamie Lee Curtis never shows her tits, not in horror. She's always a virgin. That's how she survives.
Yeah.
And it's true. If you watch this movie from beginning to end, she doesn't have sex. So.
Now, what do you think of Donald Pleasant's role as Billy Loomis? Not only to the franchise, but to this movie. What?
You said Billy Loomis.
Did I say? Well, Loomis, obviously. Whatever the fuck. You were talking about.
He didn't mean to, guys. He didn't mean to.
This Loomis could have been in a cinematic universe. This could be Loomis as a grown up, you know, mental psychologist. Take it away here, Mindy. What did you think of his role as Dr. Loomis and the iconic role? Because besides Michael and Jamie Lee Curtis's character. That's the other guy. That's the other third guy to this franchise that's like, this is the franchise.
Well, because he kind of made, excuse me, he kind of made his character. And what I mean by that is, like, when I said Tony Todd, you think of Candyman.
Yes.
When you say Neve Campbell, you think of Sydney. You say Skeet Ulrich, you think of Billy Loomis. You, and then when you say Dr. Loomis, you think of Donald Pleasant.
You don't think of Malcolm McDowell?
Absolutely not. He tried. He really did. He tried very hard.
Yeah.
The British accent was too much for me. Why do you got a British accent? Yeah. Like, why? Why do you need a British accent? You don't need one. You don't need one. And how is it that you've been working with the same patient for 25 years? And you don't look like you've aged.
Yeah.
That's my problem. At least Donald Pleasant like, put the work in and was like, all right, so let's make sure that I look like I'm getting older.
Yeah.
Malcolm McDowell was like, oh, no, I just want to stay. I want to stay handsome. And it's like, no, that's not the way Dr. Loomis was. Like, he was crazy. He was obsessed with Michael.
Right. That's what he was. And Samuel Loomis, sorry. But I love how crazy he gets, mm-hmm. like, beyond in the franchise, because I feel like he just gets more and more fucking nuts as the franchise goes on.
Absolutely, because he is driven to madness about the fact that he cannot get this man, this child, to go away.
Yeah, and it's a great arc. But I like how grounded he is in this first one, too. And I like how he's kind of the savior to Lori. Not like the savior, but like, because she's an independent badass woman, nerd. Like,
she's a babysitter.
Yeah.
She's taking care of them kids. She's like, oh, kids, go to the bathroom and hide, and I'm going to go after her with a hanger. Like,
yeah.
I'm a babysitter, too, and I can tell you right now, my ass is going to be upstairs with the children.
Yeah.
Not trying to fight the intruder. I don't want to be no hero.
But she is an independent woman that don't need no man. But he is a nice little relief for her, and he's like that older presence, and you kind of get
And Michael also respects him as well. You can see it in the Rob Zombie films. You can also see it in these films. Whenever Donald Pleasant, Samuel Loomis, whatever, whenever he calls Michael's name, Michael does stop every time, like clockwork. As soon as he calls out to Michael, he stops what he's doing. Because, as you say, it's a father figure thing. He was the only man in Michael's life for 30 years. Because his father went away. So, I mean, he very much so looked at him for approval.
Absolutely.
So when he got sternly yelled at, it's like he sternly yelled at by a parent. What do you want? Why are you yelling at me?
Yeah. And I think it's funny that with all this brutality going around and how he's so scared, but he still has times to fuck with the neighborhood children while they're at the house and stuff.
And outside the school.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. He hates bullies, man. I'll give him that. He hates bullies.
He does hate bullies.
And one other thing I have to give Michael Myers credit for is he does not hurt babies. He does not hurt children until they are able to make decisions.
Yeah. Once they start fucking, he's ready. He's good to go.
Well, not even that. Like, because he even went after Lori's daughter later in the series. But what I'm saying is he waits for them to be old enough to make decisions. And then he pounces.
Very true.
He's not going to kill a baby. And that's what I actually really enjoy about him.
Yeah.
And I also have a lot of respect for the filmmakers that have kept true to that through all the years. Because you know how people like to change things and manipulate things and whatnot. We can easily be manipulated into thinking that he killed a kid or he killed a baby.
Yeah.
But you don't need that. He's scary enough without it.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about John Carpenter as well, is the simplicity and the effectiveness. It was so effective, so amazing, yet so simple.
Yeah, and you got to think, people aren't desensitized to this back then like they are now. Like, you and me can watch pretty much anything on TV. I mean, we've seen some gruesome fucking shit. And some stuff that makes our stomach curls, and we're still like, okay, but that is a piece of content that people can view. Back then, this is like new ground. This is new territory. People are watching knives go into people's throats and stomachs, and it's a new – so they also have to do it in a way where they can't be too gruesome yet because they don't know what they're doing. I mean, they know what they're doing.
They can't take it too far.
Yeah, they don't know how the people are going to react yet because they haven't seen much like this.
I definitely agree. Absolutely. They don't know how far they can take it or not.
Yeah, I mean, now we know.
Yeah.
But
I will have to say, though, people, the double back on the I've never been scared before. I have been scared this last year. I witnessed a deer being shot in the face.
Damn.
And it scared the ever-living hell out of me.
Yeah, I
can cried the entire way home. I called this one. I was sitting right next to me. A deer died, and I don't know what to do. And it's just because I've never seen anything get shot like that before.
Yeah.
Like point-blank range, because it was a sheriff that shot it, guys. It wasn't just a random-ass dude that decided, hey, I'm going to kill this deer. Like, the deer got hit by a car, and he was in a yard laying down and bleeding, and... unfortunately, when animals are like that, you got to put them out of their misery.
Exactly.
so.
Exactly.
But it doesn't make it any less scarier. That's why, like, Daniel said, like, yes, we're so desensitized to seeing it on TV and whatnot, and we really are. But when it comes to seeing it in real life, we're not.
No, I mean, when you see, like, especially animals, even in movies, animals, I don't like seeing that.
Yeah.
You know, kill a dude all day long, but get away from the puppy, you know? That's exactly how I feel. But this film did a couple of things very well. What would you say was one of the lamer kills? One of the kills that you weren't a huge fan of?
The one police guy that was sitting in the attic that was supposed to be keeping an eye on him.
Okay.
I feel like he was basically like a throwaway kill.
Yeah.
I feel like they could have done so much more than that. They could have had Michael use the guy's knife stick. He could have used his belt and hung him. He could have done something. But I believe he shot him with
yeah.
his own gun. So, to me, that was a wasted kill.
Yeah, I can see that.
I don't like waste. I like you to take every opportunity that you can to scare the heck out of me.
Yeah.
I'm watching a scary movie. Make it scary. Don't make it mediocre.
Yeah, I mean, there was a mediocre kill that I guess my lamest one, it does mean something to the story, and it isn't wasted. But I thought they didn't do anything with it. And that's the naked dead trucker on the side of the road.
Okay.
But I guess it does mean something to the story because that's how Michael gets his jumpsuit, obviously.
Yeah, but they don't show it.
No, they don't show it. They just show a naked dead trucker. And it's like,
yeah.
I don't find that entertaining. I mean,
no.
I didn't need it.
Like, they honestly could have just not even put him there and just had, like, a news story go off about it.
Yeah.
Oh, and trucker was found naked on the side of the road by Haddonfield. Like, it would have had the same exact effect.
Oh, I agree. 100%. The final chase scene, because this starts... I don't know if Black Christmas or Psycho had it, so if they do, please correct me. Mm-hmm. And I know you won't shy away from doing that. But this kind of starts the final girl circuit, right, where... She sees a body and she's like, oh shit. And then she like turns around and there's another body and she sees all her dead friends. And now she's running away from the killer. And it's like this big thing.
She's
and she's throwing shit
mind.
At him. Yeah. She's fighting him.
I will have to say this is the first one where the girl actually uses her head. Instead of going in the bathroom and hiding, she's going in the closet and arming herself with a hanger. So She's very imaginative. You can tell that she's a really good student, too. Because she's really, really good at going toe-to-toe with him.
Yeah, no, I agree. And just, there's so many, well, I guess it's one big scene, but there's so many little things in that one scene that makes the movie and is iconic.
Oh, yeah.
Whether the her fate, which we posted on our Instagram, which him kind of emerging from the or the door space behind her,
mm-hmm.
and her face, or when she thought he was beat like the second time, and then the sit up, the Undertaker sit up, and then the look to the side, and that's fucking creepy. That's like, oh, it's over. It's like, oh shit, he's still.
You hear the and like he's getting up, and you're like, oh, sweetheart, you better run.
And then obviously one of the greatest shots in horror movie history is the shot of him laying on the ground after he falls off the two-story or three-story building?
Three-story.
Three-story building. So he falls off that.
Yeah, he was the original pain angel, folks.
Yeah.
he was the original pain angel. If you wonder what a pain angel is, when you're in so much pain that you can't move and your arms and your legs are spread out like you're going to do like one of those angel things with your arms and your feet. Or in the winter.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the pain angel people. And he was the original, the OG.
Yeah.
Pain angel.
So that's what happened there. And then they look back over and he's gone. And
mm-hmm.
it's like, oh shit. And Michael Myers lives to see another day.
Yeah, he just doesn't go away.
How many butcher knives out of 10 are you going to give this movie, Mindy?
Oh, it's a classic. I'm going to have to go 9.
9?
Yeah. It's a classic.
Yeah. I'm going 9 butcher knives as well. That's what this movie gets. I think, like, on all sides of the spectrum, it's a great rewatch. Even as a horror fan, if you've seen it before, it's a great rewatch. Even every Halloween, if you want to do something like that, you know, like, it's just a nice movie that you can always go back and watch and appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah, like, we do Screamoween on Halloween, but actually the whole month of October, we watch horror movies, basically. And Halloween is one of them.
Yeah, this
there.
Ends up in the rotation quite a bit. So, between the aesthetic elements to the atmosphere to the violence to the
music,
the score makes this movie. It was just a very well put together film. As we get towards the end here, Mindy, is there anything else you want to kind of touch on?
The only thing that I'm really going to say is that next week we are going to be doing another movie of my choice. We're going to be going into The Exorcism. Okay. I'm not doing all of them. There's way too many, and most of them have nothing to do with the original one. So, yeah. But it should be a good ride. As far as this one goes, I think we covered everything, honestly.
Yeah,
if you do have any questions or, you know, even things that you just want to, like, put in there and be like, hey, you guys should have talked about this. You guys should have talked about that. That's what our pages are for.
And we'll 100% address it at the beginning of the next show, too.
Absolutely.
If you want to send anything, comments, I'm totally fine with wrapping this up at the beginning of the next show.
Absolutely.
And answering any questions people have. My only other thing I have to add is, you said he was a child. You said he had that childlike perspective because he was locked up for so long away. How is he able to operate a vehicle like that?
Watch people.
Okay.
Why do you think it was so chaotic when he was driving the vehicle?
Oh, yeah, he wasn't very good at it.
He wasn't really good at it. He watched people drive. That's how he learned how to drive. This was cool.
Absolutely.
All right, guys, it's getting towards that time, so we're going to give you the good old hee-hee. Dana's going to close us out here.
Absolutely. Make sure to keep following the Scaredy Cats Facebook page. Go on the Instagram. Give us any comments, questions. We're open to hear it, as we just said. And tune in to next week. Mindy, it was a blast.
It was. It was an absolute blast.
Hootie who?
Hootie who, guys?